Hey, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to this week's message. My name's Aaron, and I'm on the staff team here at Eastlake. Everything we do around here depends on the generous donations of our local and online community, people just like you, who tune into these messages and see great benefit from living that idea that life is a gift and love is the point. So if you love what Eastlake is up to, we'd encourage you to contribute by going to eastlakecc.com. With that, let's jump into this week's message. Today, we hear from Jason Lewis as he continues our Enneagram series, Nine Paths to Wholeness, speaking from the perspective of an Enneagram 8.
Well, hey, everyone. I am so glad to be with you today. Welcome to Eastlake in our new kind of digital format. I know it's a little bit strange, but I am so glad that you're tuning in and that you're hanging out with us. I hope you've been following along during this series, Nine Paths to Wholeness. As we've kind of dove into the Enneagram. If you haven't watched the other weeks, regardless of what other number you are, I absolutely recommend it because I started watching probably 2 weeks ago and catching up, and they've just been amazing. I absolutely love them. So today I'm here to share on the Enneagram number 8. Now, that's my number. And I don't know if you know anything about Enneagram 8s, but we are often called the Challenger. Which if you talk to most people, they're going to say that that's a nice way of saying that they're kind of a dick. The eights are kind of known as the brash, kind of loud, opinionated, and aggressive, kind of reactive or confrontational personality types. I've heard people say that to me before. At different ages of my life, it's changed as I've gotten older. It's not always that. And it's really not like that all the time now, but it was like that for a season in my life. And I think we all, you know, you mature, you grow up. People sometimes say that we're kind of bulls in the china shop with people's emotions, that maybe emotions are secondary to us. I think we sometimes can be perceived as non-feeling or that we have a lack of empathy and compassion that is readily kind of seeable, knowable in certain circumstances. And the other one I've heard too a lot is that, you know, they're the ones that look for a fight. This is the fighting number. And while I wouldn't say all of that is true, I also wouldn't say it's all untrue. I think what makes an eight and what forges that personality type is certainly born out of a certain kind of pain and wounding. And it builds a personality that probably has to grow up a little too quick. And in it, it kind of changes the way, at least for me, it has changed so much about me and who I am and how I see and perceive the world, how I operate and function. And so some of those parts of the eight are present in me and have been more or less depending on my stage of health, my status of relationship, my stresses or my feelings. It does fluctuate. But to kind of give you just a notion on like kind of what builds this personality, because I think people would describe me as a bit of a fighter, as a bit of a knucklehead, as someone who comes across sometimes a little bit non-empathetic. And I want to help to clarify some of the myths around my personality and some of maybe the misconceptions about what eights really are. I was born into a very interesting family. My parents are from two different walks of life. And I remember as a kid, just there being so much, fighting and, there was a lot of high tensions all the time, lots of yelling, lots of anger. And I kind of grew up in something that felt a little bit like a war zone. And if any of you know me, you know the full story. But the bigger deal is that my relationship with my real dad, who I absolutely love and think is a marvelous human being, he's also an eight. in fact, to be clear, all the men, my uncles and father included on both my mother's and father's side are eights. So we kind of crank them out, I guess our bloodline does, but we kind of have grown up in the same household for a number of generations here. So my father was a hard man, is, and an angry man when he was younger. And the kind of wounds that I incurred because of that were really the kind that made me feel like there was no real space to be vulnerable, no real space to have emotions. And so once you offer to someone that space inside yourself and they really kick it, you learn, I think, to not offer that space anymore. And so you begin the process of protecting yourself. And for me in particular, I just realized that I was done crying. I was done feeling afraid. I was done being small. And I decided then and there, like, I would just never let anybody see me weak. I would just never be a coward. I would just never be afraid. I would just throw myself at everything with everything I had. And I would pick any fight, take any challenge, combat anything to prove that I wasn't weak, that the things that were befalling me at home, just they weren't ever going to control me. And if you know an eight, one of their primary fears is just that sense of that fear of being controlled, manipulated, destroyed, that you might be a slave to something in that way. At least for me, that's always how I articulate it. And just this deep soul level aversion to that. And as you've been following along, hopefully in the series, I just listened like about a week ago to Brits. And one of the brilliant things she said was about the song from Sleeping at Last and the different numbers. And I went and listened to mine, 8. And one of the lyrics right out of the gate, like, crushed me. I bawled when I heard the song. So I highly recommend, if you know your Enneagram number, it is so worth your time to listen to it. They're all amazing. But one of the ones lines it said is, I picked up this armor and suddenly it fit. And that would describe probably the next like almost 20 years of my life, where I was wildly invulnerable, as non-emotional as I could be, constantly engaging in some form of conflict, whether it was with family or friends at work, whether it was boxing or wrestling, athletics, anything that brought me into confrontation, I was engaging in. And I kind of just did this on autopilot, uncertain of why this was the case. Everything to me seemed to be a fight, seemed to be a challenge. It almost, like, my experience of life was the world's against you, so you need to get nasty and you need to get after it, like, because it's never going to cut you a break and there are no real allies. Like, you're the hardest dude you know. No one really likes you. No one's going to be down for you, right? You're going to offer yourself to them and they're just going to crush it or use it to destroy you. So there really isn't a space in there to offer your real self. And then I went through this all the way through my life into high school. And in high school, it was even worse because we moved and I was the only black kid, basically one of three in an all-white school. And I just got ridiculed constantly about an unchangeable factor in who I was. And the deep sense of injustice in that just constantly kept me on edge and on guard. I walked all the years of high school thinking that I was sincerely under threat and that any ally I had could turn on me because it had happened. And anybody that was in my life or present in it was plotting on some way to destroy me. And so my goal was to just make myself as invulnerable as I could. And so whether that was through athletics or humor or et cetera, I tried all these different means. And I kind of had built like a functioning little fractured world of a life. And then what changed was I met this girl in senior year named Nikki Powell, just a lovely human being. And she was probably the first person that ever really saw me. And I remember she transferred to our school from another school. And she was light-skinned too. And I remember when I first saw her, I had that immediate awareness, as most people do with their close friends and family and partners, that like the way I was good enough.
Well, Hey, everyone. Excuse the interruption for a quick minute. My name is Kristen. I'm one of the team members here at Eastlake, and we're so glad that you're joining us today on the podcast. It's been so encouraging for us to hear stories from people all over the country and the world who are listening to these messages and resonating with this idea that we just keep saying over and over again, which is life is a gift and love is the point, and that we are all committed to being a beneficial presence in our own community. So thanks for joining us. I hope that that's resonating with you. It's just really fun for us. So wanted to also say thank you to those of you who contribute. This place, all of these things that we do are happening because of people who make consistent, even just small consistent gifts. It helps us plan. It helps us know that there are really people behind us who want this thing to continue. So thank you to those of you who do that. If you haven't had a chance to give yet, I would encourage you to maybe think about doing that if you find this beneficial in your own life. To make a contribution, it's really easy. You can go to eastlakecc.com and there's a donate button there with all the info. So thanks so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the message.
That, for me up until that point, was so rare. And then when I got to know her, it became even more apparent that that was the case. And we became great friends, and she's still a friend, and she's dope. And it was just this learning for me where all of a sudden, through her kind of love and friendship, I became aware of so much more that was going on inside myself. Up until that time, I just kind of had felt so emotionally disconnected, almost like blind. Like somewhere I made that decision to just abandon emotions and not even really try to engage them. So I pretty much had laughter or joy and furious rage. I was like, I just kind of floated between those two things. It was a non-optimal system for navigating adult life, especially as I got older. But it taught me so much, and I learned so much about in that what I actually had to offer. I think before that, I just saw myself as kind of this a missing piece that didn't really have a place that he belonged. And so I wasn't really aware of what your value is. Like, if you don't fit anywhere, it's hard to know why you count. And then I did know. And then all of a sudden I was aware that part of what's great about being an eight, part of what's a benefit of having an eight as a friend or a family member, is that they're never afraid of a mess. Like, if you know me and I love you, there's nothing, I don't care if it's an infidelity, if it's a vehicular manslaughter, if it's a crazy financial mistake, there's no mess you're going to come to me with that I'm not going to have grace for and be on your team to help figure out how to resolve that issue. That's just never going to change. That's how I've always been. And I think the second thing that I bring is that I would describe myself, and I think the eights I know, especially in my family, is that we're true allies, road dogs, that we are capable, interested, and willing to go to the furthest lengths for the people that are in our lives. That there's like, my friends always know this, like, dude, you can go to hell and I will go with you and further. There's no fights, there's no wars, no nothing that I'm scared of. And so I think the other thing is that my friends know, like, if things go really bad, I'm the kind of person that I believe that people look to and can rely on, because I take joy. A part of my personality is that I take joy in the conflict and the mess. That kind of really messy, strenuous thing makes me feel alive, makes me feel good. And I think that's hopefully what my friends know. I'll give you a good example. There's this book I read a long time ago by Cormac McCarthy called The Road, and I think most people that read it or have seen the movie, and I've talked about it here before at Eastlake, they come out of that and they kind of have that sense of like sadness. Like, it's a sad story. But for me, it's just basically a story of a father and a son, a father trying to raise a son in a completely destroyed and demolished world. And the father's unwillingness to bend on his nature, on what he knows to be true, and how much he guides the kid, and how much the game is revealed, that the heart of the father is one of just, it doesn't really matter what the circumstances are. Like, I'm never going to be unjust. I'm never going to be unloving. We're like, the son's asking him, like, are we going to eat people if we get too hungry? Are we going to rob people just because they can't protect what they have? Like, and the dad's like, never, no, we'll never do these things, right? This is a fight and we will fight it to survive, but we will do so with honor and courage and a sense of bravery and an inner truth. And the son says, well, how do you know? And the dad's like, because we carry the fire. And I think that's part of what I bring to my friends, that sense that like, we're going to get there and we're going to figure it out and we're going to fight through it. And we're just going to keep holding the fire the whole time. We're never going to lose our sense of strength, our sense of optimism at any level, because then we lose who we are. And that kind of comes to my last part, which is, I think one of the other things I can think of that I like to bring my friends is a kind of a sense of meatheadedness. I know it's like not really a real term, but to clarify, is just the idea that some things don't need thinking. Like, some things you just need to, like, you know, go. And I think sometimes people, especially my close friends who I love so dearly, are so immensely talented. I just tend to believe everybody's strong. When I see human beings, I just think almost everybody's strong. Almost everyone's capable. And it's usually a process through by self-doubt or prior wounding or bad experiences where people build a story where they're maybe not strong or they're maybe not as capable. And I just fundamentally disagree. I've tested myself and I've also tested tragically some other people. And I know how unbelievably the depth of strength and the ability to overcome is inside the hearts of men and women on this planet. Because I think to be alive at all is a feat of strength. And so for me, I always want to bypass a lot of the discussions on confidence or whatever and just immediately affirm people's strength. And I want them to see that they have so much potential and so much capability. And I think when you engage with innate, sometimes what you'll feel like is, especially when I talk with like my uncles, is I might show up a little insecure, and a good 8 conversation generally means at the end of it, you're going to feel like you can rip the world in half with your bare hands. And I certainly hope I bring that to other people. I know that's what 8s, my 8s that are my friends, they bring that to me. And I always just love that. I love feeling charged like that. And it's such a gift. But in light of all those things, I'm also really aware of what it is to have inner work. I think one of the big things is once I learned what was really good about me and or what was positive about my personality, what I could bring to someone, I also realized a lot of what I still have to work on. And some of that stuff is very, very challenging and makes me feel, you know, insecure at times about, am I my healthiest self? Am I my healthiest version? And I think one of the big things is I went to a process, which we've spoken about at ESIC, I think quite extensively, Hoffman, the Hoffman process or the Hoffman Institute. And it was my first real deep dive into kind of therapy and counseling. And it is through this work that I became very aware of the big things in my way. And I think if you're an 8 and you're listening to this, my deep hope is that you're able to live a life of authenticity and meaning. And I think the big things that were in my way, and I can't speak for everyone, really boils down to vulnerability. Vulnerability, surrender, and the pursuit of inner peace instead of war within the self. I think about how I was at Hoffman for just a little while, and one of the guys said to me, he's like, hey, why are you here? And I said, oh, there's just a well of anger down there, and I've never been able to get rid of it. and he said, oh, you know, by the end of the week, it'll be gone. And I thought, there's no possible way. And he just looked at me and he said, well, if you're vulnerable and you really show up with who you are, then I'm certain it will. And something about the way he said it, just if you really show up, I all of a sudden became aware, like, when's the last time I was ever in a room, ever in a relationship, a conversation, you know, or even just an interaction where I was really in the room, Not the bravado, not the sense of strength, not the thing that hates weakness and fears vulnerability and fears destruction or control. Just you there, able to be vulnerable and surrender and connect to this unique moment, person, or experience. The answer to that was very few, very, very, very few. And that has been my ongoing work. And through that, the depth of my relationships, the sense of meaning I get from my job and my friends, being able to actually experience something other than just joy and anger, to feel my sadness, to feel my peace, to feel my warmth or my excitement or my fear even. You know, God forbid you're afraid of anything or that certain things overwhelm you or that, holy crap, you might not be able to do it all by yourself. You know what I mean? Like, you might not have every answer, you know? All of these things were the process where I began, and I'm still, obviously, as it will be for my life, that work of watching and seeing and paying attention to the spaces in my life that I'm scared to go. And most of those for me are in that space. And I remember one of the guys saying there, he said, you know, where I grew up, everybody was a mobster. I was a mobster, my bloodline. And I was like, crazy, dude, this guy, you know, this guy was a a mob figure. And then he said, I always thought what was tough was carrying guns and being hard and mean and like cold to women and, you know, and to our friends and family and, you know, being ready for violence and conflict at any moment. And he goes, and it wasn't until I learned that the really hard work was learning to be open and vulnerable and not protect your heart. Learning how to, you know, from people that have, you know, that meaningfully deserve that interaction, but just to not guard your heart with such a sense of reactivity and like, you know, just in that volatile way. And I all of a sudden was like, this guy's a psychopath. Why would you ever do that? Like, someone could hurt you and then you would be weak. Like, why would you ever be weak? And then I went to a counselor. And then what I realized after doing the work is that my greatest feats of strength, almost exclusively and without exception, have been when I have had the capacity, the strength, and the courage to really let my heart show and let my feelings be heard and to really be present and bring my authentic self, even though I am vulnerable and I'm surrendering to the potential judgment and the vulnerability it puts me in to be harmed and to be weak. And yet, out of all of those things, my greatest growth in relationships, friendships, jobs, and just my overall connection with God and the meaning in my life has more than tripled. So being friends with Nate is sometimes tricky. It can feel like you're going to get rolled over. But I promise you that if you are engaging with someone and they are an eight, that is love, that is them trying to connect with you. It's them trying to show up for you, trying to be there to guard you and protect you and push you and see you flourish. And it's only because in so many ways, we, I think, at times in our lives have felt so weak and so unprotected and so squashed that the injustice of that has made us a little bit of these kind of warriors for people's wellness. And their real, authentic, true selves to shine. And so I hope that if you hear this, I hope wherever you're at, you guys are well, you're safe. I know it's the craziest time in the world and a little bit disconcerting, but I want you to know that our community, while we are not together there in body, we certainly are in spirit, and I hope you know that we love you. I certainly think about you. I know that you are strong, that you will get through this. And I don't know, I think we've all clearly been impacted by this to different levels. And just know that my greatest sympathy, love, encouragement, and hope rides with you wherever you go. And I so greatly look forward to seeing you again back at Eastlake when this all, as they say, too shall pass. So thank you for listening and hope you have a great week.